Hello. I assume you are patterns and you are practices, so I will remember that as I go through the talk. My name is Don Box. I'm director of development over a group that builds a whole bunch of stuff about making data show up with developers. I'm very fortunate today. I've got Sean Pather. Sean Pather is the development manager over the Entity Framework, OData, which is what we're going to talk about today. And also, Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, you own XML, don't
That's
you?
Right. I own XML.
Yeah, yep. So anything XML, he owns it. You love XML, you should get down and say, thank you, God, for giving us Sean Pather. You hate XML, it's up to you what you do about it. So what we're going to do is spend about an hour talking about our experiences with basically making data open, right? The genesis of some of this technology came out of the data access team. Right, and as you well know, Microsoft and other vendors have a long litany of coming up with new data access technologies every couple of years. And so there's some historical context here we'll talk about. But I really want to just talk about how we think about making data open, both in general, but also relative to the applications you folks are all building. So why don't we go ahead and get started. There's two very interesting app patterns that we wanted to talk about today. And they both occur in nature. They're both very, very, very common. And there's a lot to learn from thinking about both of these app patterns simultaneously. The picture we have over on the left-hand side is a very common pattern where, effectively, I've got some data which I need to be shared by lots of clients, right? I've got information that I care about that I need to build a variety of UI facades on top of. But when I'm building those UI facades, I'm doing it at the same time I'm writing the back end. Right, and this is probably the way many people in this room go up often build applications. This, by the way, is the sweet spot for Rhea services. Those of you who use Rhea services, which is a Silverlight-oriented feature, right? It's really designed in a way where I'm writing the UX, I'm writing the consumption code, and I'm writing the code that it's talking to. And they're built in tandem. They're very purpose-built. And if you think about the way data access and data transfer works in those applications, it's very ad hoc. It doesn't really matter, right? The protocol, the format, the interchange patterns that I use between the client and the server fundamentally are my business. Unless you're looking at my code or unless you pull up Netmon and start monitoring the wire, it doesn't really matter. It's really kind of interesting to watch that people play very, very fast and loose in these situations, and it's very easy to do so because quite often you rev the client the same time you rev the service. Right? It's very funny. I just talked to some folks over in Xbox today, and we were talking about how they build Xbox Live. Right? And when they change things in Xbox Live, they redeploy chunks of code off to your Xbox console. How many people have an Xbox? And I wish I could be like Oprah yesterday. Apparently on Oprah yesterday, did you see this? Right? She said, you're all getting an Xbox. You're all getting a Kinect. You're not all getting one. None of you are getting one. I got no swag for you guys today. Except... yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, I've now diminished this talk. But in the Xbox scenario, it's kind of interesting because they don't care who talks to Xbox Live except Xbox consoles. So when they want to rev the way the data gets interchanged or the way the control gets modified, they have this luxury that they can basically rev them more or less wholesale. And that's why if you have an Xbox, occasionally one of the things you get is, you know, we need to go update your software because sometimes we've evolved the protocol. Very, 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 very common pattern. Another very interesting pattern, which we've believed in at Microsoft for quite some time, and we've tried various attempts to make this one work, is basically very different, which says, look, I've got information, or I've got logic, I've got stuff I want to make visible to lots and lots of people, and I don't know who they are yet. Right? So it's basically building a service for which you're not writing the consumption code. Maybe you're going to write some consumption code. But in general, you're writing a service, and you're hoping the world will come to you, or some segment of the world will come to you. This is another pattern that we see out in the world. Microsoft builds these. Other people build these. It's kind of interesting that it's hard to get that one to work. Right? If you think about Microsoft's arc, our journey through this, right? We did DCOM. We did SOAP, we did Hailstorm. We've done all kinds of things trying to build these services for people to attach to. And it's kind of challenging, right? And if you look at the current state of web services, right, you've got Facebook, which has their own proprietary API. Why do people program against Facebook? Because they care about the value that's in there, right? Not because it's necessarily easy to program against Facebook. It just happens that they have 500 million users, and you really want to get access to that information. Similarly, if we look at Twitter, the way we program against Twitter and go do queries against Twitter feeds, again, there's no uniform way to get to it. People get to it through content because they really care about the content. What we've tried to do here at Microsoft is enable an ecosystem so that we can have a more open way to interact with information. And so what we came up with was this thing called the Open Data Protocol. And we did the Open Data Protocol probably 3 years ago.
August 2008.
So that would be 2 years ago plus. And really the goal was, how can we solve both of these problems? That is, how can we address both of these scenarios in such a way that we have an opportunity to build a richer ecosystem? Because, for example, if I'm in my information tool of choice, which for a lot of people is Excel, it's kind of hard to talk to Twitter, right? If I'm using Excel, it's kind of hard to go talk to Facebook. There's really no connection. So our goal in doing the Open Data Protocol was to create an ecosystem where people could basically reduce the friction of data acquisition, right? How can we lower the bar and make it easier for more people to contribute information into the world and have more ways to consume that information? So we thought about both of these app patterns, we looked at the state of the world, and we came up with this protocol. Let me just say a few things about the protocol, and then I actually want to drill in and talk about some of the what I think are the interesting characteristics of it. By the way, Sham, I didn't snap my fingers.
Oh, I apologize. So I
No. It just shows that we're completely in sync, and I didn't need to snap.
Great.
So if I look at the Open Data Protocol, the first thing we said is, look, most of the information we want is accessible through the web, right? The web is a sea of data, and how do we unlock that? So we basically said, look, we're going to sand with the grain. We're going to embrace HTTP and not just use it as a transport, but actually look at how HTTP works, where HTTP has succeeded and where some of the limitations are, and really try and amplify our investment in where it succeeded. And so one of the key architectural principles that we believe in OData is that data gets modeled as resources. We are on our way to making every piece of information on the web a resource and have this a set of characteristics. One very important set of characteristics is having a uniform set of operations. Right? If we look back, you know, Microsoft, you know, me personally too, we worked on SOAP, right? And we really wanted to build this sea of a programmable web so that lots and lots of applications could program against lots and lots of services. What we found out was, because we made no commitments to the operations in the world of SOAP, we basically were silent about it, and we came up with all kinds of conventions where people had action URIs and things like that, there was no ecosystem. There was no natural ecosystem, right? Because to consume a web service that was using SOAP and WSDL, you had to get a programmer involved. And when you need to get a programmer involved, you introduce friction between people who want to consume this information and the information itself. So we embrace HTTP, and we embrace this notion of a uniform interface or a uniform set of operations. Most importantly, GET. Right? If you think about what GET represents in the web, there's a lot of different ways to interpret it. One is it's a name of a resource. It's an address of a thing that I can go talk to. Another way to think about it is it's a functional expression, right, that can be evaluated over on the server side, right? So we really embrace this notion of a uniform set of operations, GET being, you know, first among equals, although we care about all of them. And by doing this, and again, by really using GET to our advantage, we're able to leverage the physics of the web. That is, the cache infrastructure of the web accrues value to OData. The way proxies work accrues value to OData. The authentication schemes, it's net neutral, right? Authentication in HTTP is a bit of a challenge. Those of you who follow this space know that we're going through, you know, multiple authentication schemes with OAuth and OAuth Wrap and OAuth V2. We track that, but at least we have a basic infrastructure to go build on where we can get basic authentication to work. So the top is just kind of motherhood and apple pie. Yes, thank you for saluting the HTTP flag. One of the interesting things about what we've done with the protocol architecturally is, look, one of the principles of the web is that URIs are opaque, right? If I give you a URI, it's just a sequence of characters. And you can't really infer much from it when you look at it. And the base level, the base layer of the way OData works is you can build a rich application without ever looking at the URI. You can treat it as an opaque thing that flows through your application, give it to people, pass it as arguments to functions, and it all just works. The one thing we've done, which is actually kind of interesting and novel and sometimes controversial, is we've defined some conventions on top of arbitrary URIs that allows me to augment a URI so that I can additionally drill into different pieces of data or alter the way the data is going to be transferred. So we'll see as we look at the protocol a little bit more closely, URIs are opaque, but sometimes we know we can do extra things with them. Great. And in terms of the way we get data across the web, we rely on standard HTTP content type negotiation. We have two formats out of the box. We may do more over time. We will do more over time. But to get maximum interop and maximum ecosystem size, we basically looked at XML and said, look, the conventions of ADAM Pub help with the restfulness and the resource orientation of where we're trying to go. So rather than just doing plain old XML, we embraced ADAM Pub. And because JavaScript is the language you will all be programming in any day now, right? It's inevitable, according to some people out in the world. Obviously, the easiest way to deal with data in JavaScript is through JSON. It also has some other advantages. So the way we figure out which one we're going to use is we rely, again, on the normal mechanisms that are available to us in HTTP, which is content negotiation. So what I'm going to do now is drill into a little bit of the protocol so we can actually see how it works. So what Shyam's going to do is he's going to flip over to the world's most popular web browser, which is Internet Explorer, still. Great. And what we're going to do is go to an OData service. So if you look up in the top, Shyam's just got some arbitrary URL up there, which is pointing to an OData data source. Now, how this OData data source is implemented, I don't know. Right? I have no idea whether it's backed by a database, whether it's backed by a directory server, whether it's backed by a file system, whether it's backed by arbitrary code. So one of the beauties of trying to build this data ecosystem with as few technical commitments as possible is we've allowed multiple data sources to come into the world. So if I look at that file format, some of you may recognize it as being the ADAM Pub service document format. And if you look at that piece of XML, there's no Microsoft-specific goop in it, right? It's an arbitrary service document that Sam Ruby or Tim Bray or any of the other ADAM gods would look at and say, yeah, I could have produced that, and it looks totally normal. And so when we look at this service document, what we see is this data source, this service that's providing data, has three kinds of things I can go find: categories, products, and suppliers. Now, what's really interesting is this is just vanilla ADAM Pub, but if I look at how it works to address any of those sub-collections, that is, categories, products, or supplies, I actually have to do some URI manipulation, right? You'll notice that we use XML base at the very top, which says the base URI for everything in this world is localhost colon whatever port number we're on slash Northwind, right? And you'll notice that each one of those sub-collections has a relative URI in the form of href. So already in OData and in ADAM Pub, I have to do a little bit of URI surgery to go get to that information. Good news is that URI surgery is I just go type some more stuff in the address bar when I'm figuring things out. So let's go ahead and do that. So why don't we drill into one of those collections? Shyam will pick one at random. And what you'll see coming back is we get a normal ADAM Pub feed, and for every entity or every resource that's in that collection, we'll see a distinct ADAM entry in there. And more importantly, you'll see the ID points to the resource identifier for that particular resource. Now, there's an interesting thing we do in OData, which is not general to ADAM Pub, which is we have a convention for encoding the identifier so that if I know a little bit more about how the data is structured, I can actually go drill into it. So you'll notice that products sub 5 is basically keying into that collection, kind of like indexing into an array. So what's great is I could go off and dereference that thing. Do you want to go ahead and look at products sub 5? So when we go to product sub 5, notice that it just drills into the individual entry. So again, resource orientation, everything is visible as a resource. Now, Chris, do you want to go back to the feed?
The feed, yep.
There were a few other things we wanted to go look at in there. If we drill in there, which one are we doing? We're doing products.
Products.
So products, the way we use ADAM, right, this is just basic ADAM 101, although it's interesting to see how we do it. we basically have two things. We have references to other resources, and then we have some just properties or attributes that are part of this entity or this resource. So the way we model references is the traditional web way using link tags. So we have a couple of link tags. One points to something called category. So there's a category affiliated with this particular product. And we also have supplier, which says what supplier supplied this product. And again, if we look at that thing, we have a URI for the resource, which is the specific category. So if Sean goes and grabs that and sticks it at the end of his URL, we can find out what category we've got. And the category we've got here, if we scroll down, you'll notice that under the content, we have the properties. And in this case, we've got a category ID. The category is beverages, and we've got a description of it. Soft, yeah, those are most of the drinks. You don't have hard liquor in there.
Ales. Yeah, well, yeah, no hard liquor.
And also notice that we've got embedded in here, and it's probably hard to show in IE, we actually have a picture of it. So again, I've got all the information I care about of it, for this data source visible to me in XML. If you go back one more, you'll notice that if I look at that link tag for the category, right before there, you'll see there's a type equals entry. What that means in terms of the data model of this thing is it's a singleton reference. That is, I know this thing refers to a single entity. If I go back now to the category, I'll bet the category has a reference to a collection. Sean is going to correct me if I am
horribly wrong.
No, you're
absolutely correct. There's a reference to the products collection, which is the related set of products for this category. And in fact, we can navigate that the same way like this. So we're sort of going through the link and back.
Here. Great. Cool. And we saw the properties. We can also drill into the individual properties. So can you go back to like the product?
Mm-hmm.
Great. So if I look at, if I want to go just drill into the product name, if I just say whack product name, I'll get an XML value which has just that piece of data. So again, I have the ability through resource orientation, through REST, to be able to address all of these pieces of information pretty simply. So I can actually, what's really, really important, and one of the lessons I learned from working on SOAP is there's a walk-up experience for my data. Right? One of the real challenges we had in SOAP was you had to write a program to get anything. Right? You couldn't do anything as a human. There was no REPL experience. It was one of the reasons dynamic languages, you know, caught on, was because there was a REPL experience out of the box. OData gets a REPL experience, and your applications that expose OData get a REPL experience because everybody's got a web browser. Cool. Let's go back a little bit.
Are you saying that OData is love?
Am I saying OData is love? No, I'm not, David Platt. I'm saying OData is a great way to expose your data. Awesome. I'm still looking for love in all the wrong places there. Great. So now what we can do is, if we scroll down, this is all traditional Atom Pub. Go down to the bottom.
Okay, let's go back to the feed, which is, I think, what you're looking for.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things was we've got...
Oh, I don't have it here.
You don't have it here.
Yeah.
Great.
Let's skip over that part.
Great. We were about to show you how we throttle data flow, right? What if I happen to have like thousands and thousands of pieces of information? An Atom feed doesn't scale, right? We can't put all that stuff.
Shall I make it work on the fly while you're talking?
Yeah, please make it work on the fly.
Great.
What Sean's going to go do is hack this code so that we can actually do some server-side page throttling. You've already got it there.
I do already have it there. Interesting.
We have a defect in your software, the software you and I are responsible for, Sean.
Let's try this.
Do you feel bad? Should we hold our hands?
I may be running the wrong thing here is what the problem is. But
oh, do you have the wrong port number or something?
Maybe. We'll see.
Great.
Yeah.
Try one more time.
Okay, so let's try. Oh, there
yeah,
it is.
Awesome. So we were obviously pointing to some other service on your box.
Yep.
Because you have many Northwind services available at all times.
That's
being in the SQL org, that's what we all do. Great. So you'll notice... if we look at this thing, we got back 25 resources, right? One of the things we do in OData is have the ability to basically give a continuation token so we can get the next 25, the next 25, and so on. Great. You don't need to dereference it. It's fine.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do now is just a little bit more in terms of URI mangling, and then we'll be done with the protocol stuff. So if we go look at this thing, You know, right now we're getting all of the information, right? So the data provider has said, I'm going to expose what products are, and you can go figure out what to do with it. And one of the things we think about when we think about uniform interfaces is, I may not want to go off and write get customer by ID, get customer by category, get customer by this, that, and the other thing, which I know a lot of people write. I can do that if I choose to, but one of the advantages of having a uniform data rep and a uniform data access machinery is I can actually allow clients to come up with a set of queries that I don't have to pre-anticipate. This is a blessing and a curse. The curse is they can type things that have some computation and actually will increase load on my server because I'm doing things. Even if it's never backed by a database, I'm now allowing the client to specify some amount of computation, which I don't have complete control over, although we'll see how we can get control. However, I don't have to sit around and wait for everybody to come to me and go write all of these get by X and get by Ys. So what we can do is do a simple filter. So what we're going to do is, because we know this thing is OData, I can add a dollar filter equals a simple predicate expression. We have a limited expression language for doing these predicates, which we let anybody go off and type. And you can be a legal OData endpoint and not support this feature, but if you want to support this feature, we have a common way to do it. So what Sean's going to do is say, I want to go find everything where the unit price is greater than 20. And so now when we go off, we got considerably less records, and I would bet the token at the bottom is different.
Yep.
Sweet.
I mean, yep.
Another thing we can do is, you'll notice we got back a lot of properties. So we got back, I don't know, there's probably 12 or 15 properties in there.
Yep.
We can also go ahead and say dollar select to filter out only the properties that we want. So we're just adding another query string parameter. So we're narrowing the amount of data we get back. So we're just enumerating the attributes that we want. Sweet. And you'll notice that with this, I believe we still get all the link tags, yes?
That's right, yep.
If I want to go ahead and expand the link tags so that they show up in this query result, I use dollar $expand. Sweet. And so now you'll notice, which one did you expand?
I expanded category. Did it not expand?
I'll bet it didn't.
Interesting.
A failure in our demo. Can you fix
possibly.
It?
Possibly, yeah, maybe. Let's try taking out the select and see if that makes a difference.
Yes?
Yep, there it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe we need to put it in the select query as well. I think that's what we did wrong.
Yeah.
Great. So you'll notice now the category got expanded, so I get all the properties of the category. So what's really interesting about this is I've basically stood up a data service, right, once, and now the consumers of my information have lots of control over how they can shape the data and filter the data out. I don't believe there's anything else we want to show in IE, or is there some important thing we missed?
Not in IE. We can show in Fiddler. Content ego and
stuff. Yeah, let's go quickly do that.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is one last piece of protocol geekery, and then I promise we will be off looking at the protocol. But by the way, by the time we're done, you'll know all of OData. So there's a little bit of upside here as you're getting a 10-minute, 12-minute tutorial, and you can now go impress all of your friends at bars by telling them trivia about OData. That's exactly what we're going to go show now.
Yep.
Right. So the way we do, the way we decide between JSON and XML as the rep is we use the standard accept header from HTTP, which is content negotiation. By default, we put out AtomPub. Would you like to know why we put out AtomPub?
I sure would.
Because every single browser in the world does something reasonable with it. Right. And again, there's a lot of human factors in the design of OData. Right. This is not just a pure geekery, you know, how do we make the technology work as well as possible? We do think about that a lot. But the walk-up experience for your information, the better we can make that, the more vivid we think the ecosystem gets. And we'll talk about what the ecosystem looks like in just a minute. So what Sean's going to do is he's going to get against that same URI he was typing over in IE. But this time he's going to type an accept header, and he's going to say application/JSON. And now when he goes off and does the get, and we look at the request body, if he does the get, did you do get?
Sorry. Nope. Just wanted to show what that looked like.
Oh, okay.
We'll do
great.
You're here?
Awesome. So we got a 200 back. And if we go look at the content, you'll see that it looks like JSON. And in general, it looks kind of like the JSON you would have expected based on what you can imagine the data model to be. We stick the under metadata in there to carry some additional signal that we use, which we document. It's all part of the OData open spec that allows people to do more with the information. But if you ignore it, it looks exactly like what you'd expect.
So you can see the name value pairs here for like product ID, product name, and so on in the JSON payload.
Yes. Great. Unfortunately, most web browsers can't show that, which is why we start with the XML and then we show this in Fiddler. Now, everything we've done so far is about query. It's about reading information, which, by the way, is the 95% case, right? Let's be very clear. Many, many OData endpoints out on the internet don't support update, right? Because they don't want Netflix does not want you changing the title of a movie. They just want you to be able to ask questions about the movie. However, OData allows endpoints to opt in to update, and on this model, we totally embrace REST. We try to do it exactly the way, you know, Roy Fielding and all the other Restifarians would like us to do it. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do a put or a post.
We'll do a post to do an insert into
Great.
The product's entity set. We'll change this accept header to be a content type header, because what it does is describe the body. And then in the body of this, I'm going to just type a very simple JSON payload. We'll create a new product, and we'll give it a product name, and we'll call it my new product. And close that off. And you can see I haven't had to include any of that metadata or any of the other stuff. It's just, you know, a very simple JSON payload because all the other fields are nullable. And I'm posting to that product's entity set with my JSON content type. And I can hit execute on that.
And in this case, our interpretation of post is arguably the original one that Tim BL wanted, which is we've posted a document that's now part of the resource space.
Right.
So we got back a 201 status code, which means created. And if we go look at the bottom, we got back a location header, which again, standard, you know, this is bog standard HTTP. And if I go take that URI and then go paste it into IE.
Get rid of this. We'll go back to IE.
And just do a paste. Sweet. We'll see my new product got created. And now, just to finish the restful journey, I can go over into Fiddler and go ahead, instead of doing a post, we can just change this into a delete of that specific resource. Turn this into a delete. Do you need to nuke the content type?
No, it'll ignore it.
Awesome. Yeah. Great. Liberal in what you accept.
Yeah.
Sweet. And now if I go back to IE and hit F5, we'll see 404.
Yep.
Right, and trust me, that's a 404, resource not found. Make sense? That's the protocol. You now know OData. Right? When you go to the bar tonight, I bet there's a party tonight, you know, and there's going to be a lot of people of the desired sex there. You're set. You guys are all set. Trust me, it's great. Great. Sean, you can attest.
Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Great. Any questions about the protocol before we move on? Great. What I want to do now is, look, the protocol is simple enough that we can explain it in about 15-20 minutes, worst case. So what I want to say is, by having a simple protocol that's very approachable and that has enough human factors that people can actually wrap their head around it and start poking at it and kind of get the gestalt pretty quickly, we've been able to build an interesting ecosystem. So let me tell you what we did. The first thing we did with OData was we built a .NET framework for it. Not that important. Because not that many people program in .NET. Like, you look at the planet, which is about 6.7 billion people, right? There's not that many programmers who can program .NET. So by building the .NET framework, it was a good bootstrapping piece of technology. But it was very hard for people to wrap their imagination around it. Because, look, you know, it looks like another RPC system or another messaging system. It's indistinguishable. Look, Microsoft has more than their fair share of those things, as do some of the other vendors. So it really wasn't all that special. What happened, what the team did, and this was before I showed up, was they went off and figured out what are the interesting places where people where they either have information or want to consume information. If you look at what an information worker does when they're dealing with data, they're sitting in Excel. Access is a lovely product, Word is a lovely product, but Excel is where most people do their data manipulation. Right, most normal folks. That is, most non-programmers. Programmers are normal, too. So Excel is where people consume information. So we figured out, how do we make Excel an awesome way to consume OData information? And we went off and did that. And then we said, where is a lot of information? And there's this thing which I'm sure everyone in this room loves, right? SharePoint. Right? I'm sure all of you are building SharePoint apps. It's the app server of the new millennia, so I'm told. And there's all kinds of information and logic and functionality inside SharePoint. And so we said, how do we unlock that and make it easily accessible through this OData ecosystem? So what happened was we did a release cycle and we went off and got these two things built. And once we got those two things, it was actually very interesting because they're both very visceral. They both are very popular and everybody kind of understands them. And so we took that and we went around Microsoft and we got other people to sign up. So what we're able to do is get many, many, many products inside of Microsoft to unlock their information through this protocol or to be able to consume this protocol. And so there are still technologies at Microsoft that do not support OData. I am confident of it. Which one? If you were king of the world, Sean, which Microsoft property or product would you want to go implement
Excel
OData
web
if
services.
It doesn't do it now?
Excel Web Services.
Excel Web Services. But yeah. I'll bet they would love to do it.
Absolutely.
In fact, I thought they did something similar.
Well, we're working
close.
On it with them. Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a REST-y interface, but it's not quite what we do. But I'll bet we can go get them, too. Mm-hmm. So we got a bunch of Microsoft properties, which meant we had some momentum. We then went off and made it so that people could consume or produce OData on other platforms that are not Microsoft, because guess what? The whole world does not use our technology as much as it, you know, makes our hearts sick. We have, you know, come to terms with it. So it turns out there's this phone called the iPhone, so we made sure that iPhone developers could consume this and iPad developers could consume this stuff. We did integration with jQuery, which we did one round. We're working on another round, which I think is going to be pretty phenomenally good. We integrated this stuff into PHP because there's a lot of people who love writing PHP for a variety of reasons. And we also went after some Java folks with Restlet. And then, of course, we went after some bigger name third parties, both some platformy things like getting us into WebSphere, but also getting into things like Facebook and Netflix. One of the interesting things about the IBM one is, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they did it without us pushing.
Yeah, we didn't even know they were doing it until they announced it.
Yeah, we used Bing to search the internet, right? And, you know, we found out that IBM was actually supporting it, and we were all like, wow, that was really great.
Yep.
And why did they do it? Because they want to get to SharePoint, and they want to get to Excel, right? So we found these very interesting pressure points in the software ecosystem, and then we're able to kind of apply that and build this flywheel. Awesome. So what I'm going to do is just show how a few of these things work, because it's pretty damn interesting. So what we're going to do is start in this tool called Sesame. Sesame, actually, Sean, I'm going to shut up. Would you like to talk?
Sure, I'll talk through Sesame. Okay, so Sesame is a Silverlight application built by a guy named Fabrice Marguerite. It's a universal data browser, and it works with OData. So one of the things that you'll notice is off to the side here, there's a list of featured data sources. And this kind of gives you a feel for the variety of types of data that are available in the OData protocol today. So there's Netflix, obviously, which we'll look at more in just a moment, some TechEd session data, some sample databases from the odata.org site, and then a bunch of government data as well. So there's a lot of data about the District of Columbia from the General Services Administration. Various cities in Canada have exposed data. So Vancouver, you can actually find the location of all the water fountains in the city through OData. As an example, and so there's a bunch of these. Now, these aren't the full list, but it gives you an idea of the types of data that you can access with OData. And the nice thing, as Don said, this is a uniform protocol, so it's possible to build a generic browser tool like this that works with all of these sources. So let's hit Netflix, and when I do that, you'll see the odata.netflix.com URL shows up here, and click OK on that. And it's going to go off and hit that OData endpoint. Hopefully, yep, there it comes. And what you'll see on the left here is a list of the entity sets that are exposed in that data set. So you can see things like genres and languages, people, and so on. But the interesting one is titles or movie titles.
It was able to do that by just fetching the service document, correct?
Absolutely.
So
yes,
that very first piece of XML we saw, they just put a UX on top of it.
Right. So I'm able to hit that. It's going to go off and query titles and then display me a grid view here that kind of shows the information about movie titles. And I can look at this in various formats. There's the grid view, there's the XML view, there's a map view, which we'll look at in a moment. And I can also, through this interface, look at the related data. So you remember those link tags in the Atom payload point to the related entities in the data set, and that's kind of surfaced here in the UI. So if I look at the related languages for this title, you can see, you know, there's English there. So, you can kind of navigate through the data that way. You can also do filtering using that same sort of syntax that you saw on the URL before. The UI here has given us just kind of a simple way to do that. So if I go here, I can click on this release year. I can add a filter to that. And I'll come in and say, I want to find movies in 1972. So I'll click on my filter, and I'll say is equal to. And really what that's doing is issuing a query to that endpoint with a dollar filter syntax on it and getting back some results. And I can actually see the query string down here at the bottom when I expand that. And you can see it's got that dollar filter, same syntax we explored in the browser. So that's Netflix, and I'm able to explore that data set. I can open a connection to an entirely different set of data. So let's go explore the District of Columbia. And here you can see that points to this OGDI cloudapp.net URL. Same thing, I go hit it, and here I can see the entity sets available from that data source. And there's things like bank locations, building permits, where the surgical centers are, and so on. So if I click on one of these, so bank locations, you know, similar deal, I can get the grid view. But you'll notice that there's some location data in here, addresses of these banks. And this tool does a nice mapping for me where I can take those things, recognize them as addresses, and actually display them on the map. So the interesting thing about this is, you know, I had two very different data sets. I had Netflix and then this government data. And I'm able to explore and interact with the data sets using the same tool because of this uniform protocol. And also I'm able to do interesting things like display this data on a map. And, you know, the publishers of the data may or may not have envisioned this application at the time that they chose to publish the data. So that's a generic browser client. Should we look at
Excel?
Excel, yes, the premier information worker client of choice. So I've got a blank Excel workbook here. And through the Power Pivot feature, we've enabled Excel to pull in data from OData sources. So if you look at my Power Pivot window here, I've got a number of choices of places where I can pull data in from. So we'll choose the From Data Feeds link or button, and I can go point it at that same OGDI bank locations data and click Next. And it's going to go off and it's going to interrogate that same service document to discover the content. I can choose finish there, and it's going to go through and traverse those links to actually pull in the data. So here it imported 223 rows. And that just shows up here just like, you know, any Excel data, which enables me to go do Excel-like things like build pivot charts over it. So if I wanted to go visualize the number of bank locations per zip code, I can just simply take these fields here. I can try and map the count of addresses per zip code, and I can put a vertical slicer on for the bank name. We'll remove this one. And now you can see I've got a nice little chart here. Let me zoom in a little bit. And I can do things like, well, if I want to filter just on Bank of America, you can see the number of branches per zip code or Chevy Chase Bank.
And they obviously have a lot of planning. Did you see the uniformity there?
Yeah, I did, yes. So you can do some interesting things with it. So because I was able to pull that into Excel, I can use all of the Excel charting tools and the in-memory BI engine that's available through Power Pivot. Now, this is kind of just a simple example, you know, graphing bank locations. You can actually do some more interesting things. This is a pre-built workbook that one of my colleagues put together. And it actually pulls data from Microsoft Dallas. And I'll click on this link to show you what that looks like. Dallas has a whole bunch of different data sets published, and one of the sources of that data is the UN. So this information that I'm looking at here is a bunch of just demographic data that came from the UN. Let me quickly sign in here, and hopefully we can get to this. Go to my subscriptions. So you can see here's the UN data, and it has just a ton of raw statistics in it. There's a whole thing. There's things like air intake, percentage of newspapers, blah, blah, blah. all kinds of different pieces of information. But in this particular data set, we pulled in literacy rates. And there's two feeds. There's one for teen literacy and adult literacy. And we could produce this bar chart per country. And, you know, you can start to see some interesting trends. Like, you often would expect that the teen literacy rate is higher because the new generation tends to be more literate. But you can notice that in some countries, like in Cameroon, that's backwards. So just a simple example of how you can use this OData and the power of Excel to go do interesting visualizations and actually get insight into the data.
And if you had YouTube penetration, I'll bet we'd find out YouTube is much more popular there than anywhere else.
Yes.
Helping
absolutely.
Teens yeah. stay illiterate.
That's right. Okay, so that's Excel.
Yeah. Do you have some data in SharePoint? Trapped in SharePoint that's saying, let me out, let me out.
Okay, so I'm going to browse to, so at Microsoft, all employees get a SharePoint site. So there's a SharePoint server called My, and I can go to My Sites, SPather, and this is my particular site. You can see I don't really use it that much. I've got my PDC trip report from 2003 in there. But what I do have is... you know, the ability to create lists. And so I've created one here called Demo. And it's basically just a task list, and it has some data in it. And I can interact with this in the typical SharePoint UI. But what I can also do is go to this special endpoint, where if I navigate to the root of the site, I can go to underscore VTI underscore bin listdata.svc. And what I see is the same kind of AtomPub service document that you saw with the Northwind data before. And each collection in here corresponds to a list in my SharePoint site. So there's that demo list, and you can see that listed here. I can hit that, and now I get the exact same data that was in my SharePoint UI, but it's in the OData format, which means I could pull it into Excel, I could pull it into Sesame, I could interact with it programmatically. It's all just available in this open way. So what should we do with this, Don?
I think we should make something new.
Make something new. Okay. So we're going to go back to our SharePoint list and insert a new item. And I'm going to do this in the most un-SharePoint way possible. I'm going to insert an item into SharePoint from the command line. So what I'll do is, so how many people here know what curl is? So a command line tool for doing HTTP requests. So what I'll do is use curl to go insert a new item into my SharePoint list. So what I do is I type curl, I tell it I want to use NTLM, and I give it my Redmond username, so that's who has permission to write to the site. I tell it I want to do a post. I give it a header saying the content type of my post is going to be JSON. And then I give it some data. So here I can put my JSON payload in. So I'm going to add an item with a title called post from PNP Summit. And we'll close this off. And we'll send it to my site's SPather underscore VTI underscore bin listdata.svc / demo. Okay, and if I got that all right, it's once my password. And what you see back is an AtomPub payload that tells me that something got inserted. I can go refresh my list here. And there you can see my new post from PNP Summit. So posting to SharePoint from the command line.
Which is really the way the Office team wanted it to
happen. Absolutely. I'm sure they envisioned that. Yes.
Yeah, I watched that Chris Capicella video last night about Office 365. I think this was in the video.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Sweet. So great. So you've seen kind of like the nature of the ecosystem. And again, the fact that we were able to connect to real assets that real people had and come up with a uniform way for people to get to it was really the way we were able to build the flywheel. And we got a lot more work to do, but it's been phenomenal to watch how much traction we've got in basically 2 years.
Yeah.
Right? That's a thing.
Yeah.
It took us a while to get ODBC that far. Yeah. We didn't get anywhere near this far with ODBC.
Yeah.
Great. So what I want to do now is write some programs. This is a software developer-oriented event, so it'd be good to write some programs. There's lots of ways to consume and produce OData. You can consume it, at least on the Microsoft platform, using a .NET client library that works with both Silverlight and with Classic.NET. We've gotten client libraries out in the world for PHP, for Java, for JavaScript, Objective-C and Ruby, and I'm sure there's other ones we should go get. These are the ones we have today. And we can produce OData basically by a piece of machinery we built on top of WebCF. And we've got server frameworks out in the world, specifically IBM WebSphere and OData for J, for those of you who like Java. Great. Why don't we go write some programs?
Let's do it.
So we're going to use the world's favorite development environment, Visual Studio. And what we're going to do is we've got an ASP MVC app that we're going to go hack on.
That's right. Right?
A lot of people build apps that have UI using ASP.NET, so we're going to start there. What we're going to do is go consume Netflix. So what Shyam's going to do is create a new MVC app. I know this is PNP. I know everybody just cringed when we said we don't want unit tests. Don't worry, we're not going to deploy this to the world. We would obviously not deploy it until we had, 80% plus test coverage. We know. Thank you. Great. And so what we're going to do now is point to Netflix. So we're going to do an ASR, add service reference, which is the way Visual Studio users are used to consuming data. And we're going to give it the Netflix URI. And when we go off and discover that thing, ASR will go pull out the same service document we keep seeing over and over again and tell us what's available in that source. And like every user in the world, we're going to say service reference 1 is a lovely name for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So to use this thing, we have to go say using service reference 1 somewhere. Sweet. Now, what I want to do is go find out what some of the top movies of 1972 were. I thought the 70s were the greatest eras for Hollywood. So let's go find out what was in 1972. Now, what I want to do is write an action that will produce a view that we can go off and render. And what we're going to do is connect to Netflix by saying Netflix catalog equals new Netflix catalog. And we're going to give it the URI that we gave to ASR. It would be lovely if ASR put this somewhere in our config file, but alas, we have improvements we can add in future versions. Great. And so now we've got a context that allows us to go talk to Netflix. And we're going to go write a query. But before we write the query, I don't want all the data, right? The Netflix database has lots and lots of fields. So I want to narrow it down to just like a 3 fields that I care about. So what I'm going to do is have this thing called movie description. And we're going to have a few properties. We're going to have the name, which is going to be a string. We're going to have the release year. Release year, which would be an int nullable with a get and set. And then we'll have an average rating. Netflix has stars, 0 to 5 stars, 0 to 4 stars. I can't remember what it is. Great. And away we go. So now we can go write a query that'll retrieve the information I want. Now be aware, Netflix does not know how to tell me the top movies of 1972. They have not anticipated that I want to go do this. They just said, I'm going to put my data out on the web and y'all go figure out what you want to do with it. It's a very, very different thing than the old school web services thing where I have to go write a distinct method for every kind of question you could ask. So what we're going to go ahead and do is write the query. And our OData library support link, so I can write a normal link query. So from t in cat.titles, where t.releaseyear equals 1972, we're going to do an order by, because I only want the top movies of 1972. I don't want to go see, I don't remember any bad movies from 1972, but I'm confident they exist. And we'll do an order by descending, because I want the top, not the bottom. Would that be okay?
That's just fine. There we go.
Awesome. And now what we're going to do is go ahead and project out the information we want by saying select new, that class we just wrote. And we'll just initialize all the fields based on what we saw before.
Great.
Did you get the average rating as well?
I did.
Excellent. So we've got the query. Now what we want to do is return this wrapped in a view. And so we'll say query dot, and we'll expand it here to be a to list. And
I only want the results.
I don't want them all. So let's go ahead and do a top 20. So we'll get the top 20 films from 1972. And again, Netflix didn't anticipate this query. They were on that, the right-hand side of that original picture. They just wanted to stand up a service and let people get rich interactions with it without knowing what they would be a priori. Sweet. So we've got this thing written. We need to go write the view. Turns out writing the view will be very easy using the MVC framework. So we'll go off and say build one strongly typed on top of that class we just wrote, which was movie description, and the content template we want to start with is list, and away we go. And we have some beautiful looking ASP.NET webpage. And now when I go browse to this thing, we'll find out what the top 20 films of 1972 were.
That's right. When it comes up.
Which will be any moment. You've never had a demo fail, have you?
Nope. I think I just tabbed out of it. Where is it? Here it is.
Great. There's our ASP.NET app. And if I go into movies or home/movies.
So I hit a breakpoint here just to emphasize one point. So we wrote this query in Link. And if I step over it and hover here, you can actually see the URL that that's been that link expression has been translated into. So if you're programming with .NET, you can just use link. You don't even need to understand the URL syntax. We'll F5 over that.
Great. And there we see. Surprise, surprise, The Godfather is the top film. And MASH, we didn't filter by movies, so we see some DVDs from TV series from the 70s as well. What was the bottom one? What else is down there?
Lady Sings the Blues.
Ah, great. Love it. Oh, Led Zeppelin, Complete Rock Case Studies. Awesome. Great. I always love looking at the results of Netflix queries.
Yeah, you get some questionable ones, especially the ones that have graphics in the demo, depending on which query you run. It can be questionable sometimes.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun, wouldn't it? Sweet. So we saw how to consume OData programmatically, right? We've done the integration into Link. So if you're a C# or VB programmer on our platform, it's really easy. We have libraries for iPhone and libraries for iPad and JavaScript. So you can do it in other places. We only have so much time. What I'm going to do now is expose some data using OData. And remember, OData is not tied to a database. It's not centered around how databases work. One of the interesting things about ODBC and OLADB is they were very much focused on what a relational database looks like. And they were there to satisfy the needs of a relational database. And we evolved OLADB to expand to all kinds of different data sources till it became the most complicated technology Microsoft has ever produced. Now, we're not done yet, so maybe we'll exceed ourselves. But OLADB was just this mind-expanding, crazy technology because it tried to be all things to all people. What we've done is try to build a very simple protocol that we think gives us the 80-20. OData is not the most optimal way to talk to a relational database, but it's a good enough for many cases way to talk to a relational database. And it also sits on top of other data sources. So what we're going to do is go build an OData feed. So we're going to just go add a class to our ASP.NET app, and we're going to call it Twitter data. So we're going to go ahead and expose Twitter as OData. So we're going to write a little class here that represents what the individual tweets look like. It's going to have an ID, I believe, of type string. It's going to have some text. And it's going to have the author. So this is, again, the only information I care about, so I'll just write a little class that wraps it. Sweet. And now I'm going to have, I'm basically, if you've ever used our ORM stacks or many other people's ORM stacks, we're going to build the context, which has a property per collection or table or entity set that I can go talk to. So we're going to go write something that looks kind of like the object context from EF, or and Hibernate has their own variation on this. Great, and we're going to bring in some Indigo DLLs to go make this work. Sweet. And now we're going to go pull out Twitter as soon as we get all of our ceremonial using statements written. Sweet. Excellent. So now what we're going to do is use the thing called syndication feed. Oh, sorry, put it in a get. We're going to go ahead and grab a Twitter feed for a particular user. So search.twitter.com, search.adam, whatever you want to do here.
So we're going to do hash OData. So we're searching for tweets that have the hash OData tag.
Thank you,
which
sir.
Is usually a rich, vibrant set of commentary
happy
that
user.
Comes back from that.
It's all happy. It's all good comments. People
right.
love it. Yes.
That's right.
Great. And now we'll go ahead and write the link query that goes against this. And this one will be actually fairly trivial. We'll just go off and project out the data we need. We don't need a where clause. We don't need anything else. Sham, are we smart enough to translate text.contains into our string contains?
We do, yes. Yes,
oh,
we
man.
Do.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But we didn't do it.
We didn't do it. That's right. So what do I want here? Text or title.text.
Yes.
And then I want for author to get it from the syndication item.
And you have to go
as
to
a collection
zero,
of
dot
authors
text.
Dot name.
Oh, great.
There we go. And then we can just simply return tweets as queryable.
Sweet. Great. So in this case, no, because we're consuming data that's not in OData form. Oh, I'm sorry. The question was, are you getting IntelliSense because we knew what the feed was? We're not talking to a feed here. So what we're doing is Twitter has a proprietary API that's specific to that endpoint, kind of like that left-hand side of app where they usually have written the client and server together, although they're evolving. So what we're doing is we're taking that one-off protocol and then putting an OData head on top of it so that we could consume it in Excel or whatever we wanted to. Does that make sense?
No, I mean, when you were typing right there, when you did i.id, you got some
IntelliSense
for i. So it knew that was because...
So it knows that the items collection off a syndication feed is of a type called syndication item that happens to have those properties.
See, we got lucky because the result is AtomPub.
Yeah.
It's vanilla AtomPub, so we're able to use syndication feed, which is just part of .NET 3, 5, I think is when we ship that.
Yeah.
And so that's why you're seeing the IntelliSense there. Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're not doing XML DOM or XLink or anything like that.
Yeah.
We didn't have to drop down that low. Obviously, we could have, and sometimes we would have to go do this. Great. So we've built the context class, and now what we're going to do is put an OData adapter on top of it. So we're going to go off and make a new data service. Excellent. And so we're just going to say the class is Twitter. It's data service of T, so we'll type in our T, which was that Twitter data class. And now what we're going to do is we're secure by default, so we're going to actually turn on some access. So what we'll say is for all entity sets that we're exposing, or tweets, either one will work, we'll say read-only, or in this case we'll make it read-write.
Yeah. Well, let's leave it as read-only because that's all we do.
Okay.
All right. And... run this.
When we run this, we'll be able to see the top or the most recent tweets.
So we can hit that Twitter SVC. And there you see the same type of AtomPub service document you saw before. There's one tweets collection available here. And we can hit that. And here you can see the results. So if I look at the properties here, somebody's asking if there's a mono provider. Somebody from the PNP Symposium. Nice, nice. Well done.
And so here's your chance. If you tweet again, we promise to hit F5, and you can all get your joke in.
Yeah.
This talk sucks.
Yeah.
Great.
Nice.
Sweet. Awesome. So, Sean, we have 2 minutes left.
Yep.
Is there any code we could write in 2 minutes that would be of any meaning whatsoever?
We could quickly build one over a database.
Oh.
Yes.
The question was, can we show an update?
Yes, so we can go back to Fiddler and do an update against the same Northwind service we had running before. Is that interesting?
Would that satisfy you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I hear that was a yes, correct?
Yes.
The answer was yes.
Great. Let me bring that back up.
And do you want to see it programmatically, or do you want to see it from Fiddler? This is your request. We're here at your... Pardon me? Great.
Great. Actually, so let's do that. So we'll go into this app. I'll stop it running. So let's go. Okay, so I have to add a project to this. I'll just do a console app so I don't have to deal with a bunch of forms stuff. So we'll add a console application in here. We'll do...
Do you still have the Northwind service running?
I do, yeah.
Great. So we'll grab the URL for the Northwind service. We'll type it in. We'll do the ASR, so we've just gotten the service document, right? And this is exactly what we did to Netflix. So the way I consume Northwind, which happens to be backed by a SQL Server database, versus Netflix, is exactly the same. We get a strongly typed proxy, which allows us to go ahead and get IntelliSense and all the things we love and know from that world. We'll go ahead and get the Northwind entity's context.
No, I need the URL, so sorry, just one
second
here.
Fine.
I need to run this, so you can keep...
Great. So what Sean is going to do is he's going to go grab the same URL he typed into ASR, which is right there. And then what we'll do is we'll go ahead and fetch an individual record So go ahead and paste it in.
Great. So then let's say var product equals context.products, and let's just do a query this way, where we say p. Product ID equals 1.
Great.
And we'll get the first one of those. And then we'll set the product
name
to be foo. And we'll say context.update object product. And then we can say context save changes. And I'll talk about in a second why that update product is necessary. So let's actually, before we run this, let's go back to our browser.
And look at the data?
Yeah. So we'll hit Northwind.
Dude, what are you looking at there?
Was
that a dude in a bra?
That was the MSN homepage. I take no responsibility for the content of that.
No, you must take responsibility. You're a Microsoft employee. We're all one. There's one Microsoft.
Fair enough.
We apologize.
All right, so.
You were offended.
Product name is Chai over here. Now let's go in here. We'll just run this app. So we'll go grab the context, grab a product.
And you could have used a where clause, but because you wanted to go do first, this is actually just syntactically a little nicer.
So I have a product here. And in fact, if I look at this, you can see here, here's product name Chai. I set the product name. I updated it on the context. And I hit save changes. It goes off and does its thing. And now when I go to the browser here, here you can see it's set to foo.
Did that do what you wanted? Great. Fabulous.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So maybe one thing we should talk about real quick about the interception concept. We won't show it, but talk about it.
Sure. So the way we implemented the Northwind service was we had a SQL Server database with Northwind in it. What we didn't do is just take the database schema and plop it out on the web and say, live the dream. What we did was a couple things. One thing was we actually, through the entity framework, were able to use mapping to control what fields and what the field names were and how we wanted to map into a more hierarchy of types. So we were able to use the MSL to control the shape of the data coming out of the database. So we weren't just taking the database and exposing it in the raw. The other thing we did when we built the Northwind service is we used query and update interceptors, which allows us, when anybody wants to talk to product, we get an opportunity to see the query as a link expression and then augment it with additional predicates. So we can do things like impose role-based security or just kind of control what you can see in the database based on any number of conditions. Like I can use time of day throttling and basically only allow you to get the top 5 during busy periods and let you get more data during non-peak hours. So we have all that capability in the plumbing, and had we had more time in the talk, we would have programmed against it, and you would have asked me other questions, which we would have written the other programs you wanted to see, but we have an hour. Great. I bet we have a final slide. I'm confident.
Yep.
Did I not say something you wanted to say?
No, you hit pretty much everything we wanted to say. So
awesome. If you want more information, odata.org, just start there. There's a bunch of links off of that. I think most of these are hanging off of there somewhere.
Yep.
So there you go. Questions? Yes.
No, really. About an OData provider for Mono. Any words and thoughts?
OData provider for Mono. Where are we at?
I actually just don't know the answer to that one.
By the way, we want OData everywhere. There's no platform that we want to disadvantage, right? We only have so many developers.
So one thing I can say. So I mean, we. Where we actually started with that was to get our client library, which ships in Silverlight, available in Moonlight.
Oh, yeah. Bigwell has a happy post about
how
you talked about on the client.
And so we're talking about doing the server as well. I just don't know off the top of my head what the status of that is. But in principle, we have no objection to doing that. We want to get this stuff out everywhere.
Actually, there's another challenge, which is the server-side bits take a fairly deep dependency on WCF. And WCF is not available in Mono, so there's a... We have to unravel that to make sure we give him we put just enough out there so that, look, if Mono doesn't want WCF, we shouldn't be shoving it down their throat, right? It just turns out to be, it was an expedient way for us to implement the server side of this programming experience. We would love it for Mono to pick up the OData stuff and not pick up the WCF. That'd be a fine solution. We actually have some technical strategies about how to go make that happen. We're just not far enough along to tell you when we're going to do it.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah. So The reason I did that is our types that the context works with, the context can work with POCO types. So when I go set something on that object, the context doesn't actually know that the thing has changed, so I had to tell it. There is a helper class that you can instantiate that basically does the hookup for you and does change tracking on the objects and informs the client, and that's really useful if you're doing like WPF data binding or Silverlight data binding scenarios on this thing. I just didn't do it in my my simple console app here.
One last question. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
log and MSDN, right?
So, question was where to find samples about the interceptions and interceptors and so on. MSDN is your best bet there. So, under the documentation for WCF data services, you can find lots of examples of that type of thing. And I'll put the slide back on. If you go to the MSDN.com/data, that's the landing page for all this stuff. One of the things there is WCF data services.
Sweet. Well, patterns, practices, thanks so much for sitting through our talk. Hope you got something out of it. And thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thanks.